go. Man, I'm going to be honest. Davis was supposed to be here tonight, and then he called me yesterday morning and said he had a 103.5 temperature. So he's okay, but you're stuck with me, which is okay because I'm happy to be here. And man, I was just sitting over there thinking, I never get tired of listening and watching you guys experience and worship God. It is so unbelievable to witness, to be a part of. I'm so thankful for it. Hey, so tonight, I wanted to start with a story from the Gospel of John. And if you don't know, the Gospel of John, it's one of four biographies of Jesus written in the New Testament. Now, John, the author, was a close friend of Jesus. He spent many years living alongside, following, being with Jesus. And so as he's spending these years with Jesus, he writes much of what he sees and what he experienced in his time with Jesus. He writes it down. That's what we have in the Gospel of John. And so John tells a story in chapter 6. In the context of the story, at this particular time, Jesus his life and ministry at this particular time, he's growing in popularity. He's going around, he's teaching, he's going around preaching, he's performing miracles, he's healing people, he's casting out demons, he's doing all these things, right? And the people, they love Jesus for it. They love him for it. They can't get enough. And so more and more people follow Jesus as he does more and more things like this until something happens. And that thing that happens is Jesus starts teaching something different, or maybe not different, he just starts to expand what he's been teaching all along. And that thing that he starts to expand is the reality of who he is. And so he teaches and calls himself the bread of life. He says, I'm God, I am the way to life. And you know what happens? The people that were so excited to follow Jesus, so excited to see his miracles, so excited to see his healing, so excited to hear and be a part of these sermons, all of a sudden, yeah, they're not so interested anymore. That love that they had for Jesus, it starts to dissipate. In fact, this is what they say, John 6:60. They said, this teaching is hard. Who can accept it? Now, here's the thing. It wasn't so hard to understand, right? Like, they knew what Jesus was saying. They said, this teaching is hard. Who can accept it? It wasn't hard to understand. It was hard to accept. See, there's a difference, isn't there? Understanding, it doesn't mean accepting. And so what happens? Well, just a few verses later, it says, from this time, many of these disciples, they turned back, and they no longer followed him. This teaching is hard, Jesus. Who can accept this kind of teaching? And so they leave. They walk away. Jesus, this isn't what we want. This isn't, we didn't want you to challenge our beliefs. We didn't want you to challenge our assumptions. We didn't want you to tell us how to live. It didn't fit their framework for who Jesus was. And so they left. No thanks, Jesus. The story doesn't end there because as the story continues, Jesus, he goes from seeing these disciples, this group of followers, and he turns to a different group. He turns to the 12 disciples. These are his closest friends, his closest disciples. Disciples is just a word that means follower. So he turns to a closer group of disciples, and he has a question for them. And if you've been tracking with the story of the disciples, it kind of strikes you as odd, like Jesus is asking a question he knows the answer to, but I don't know if he is totally sure how they're going to answer. Because he sees these people walk away after he does this teaching, and he turns to his closest friends, and he says, what about you guys? Are you going to leave too? Do you want to go? In other words, I think what Jesus is saying to them, and these are his closest friends, he's saying, guys, are you sure this is really what you want? Like, are you sure that this is what you really want? Now, here's the thing. I don't think Jesus was trying to scare them away. I don't think Jesus is saying, dude, get out while you can. No, I think what he's doing is he's adjusting their expectations.
I think he knows that following him, it's not going to be easy. It's going to challenge what they think. It's going to challenge their assumptions about the world. It's going to challenge their opinions. It's going to challenge their beliefs. It's going to challenge how they live. And sometimes Jesus knows that's going to be really, really hard. And so he says to them, he says, look, is this, guys, are you sure? Do you want to leave too? Or are you sure this is what you want? See, like I said, I think what Jesus is doing, I don't think he's trying to push them away. I think he's trying to adjust their expectations. And the reason I share that whole story is because I think in a lot of ways, that's what's going to happen for us tonight. Because we're going to shift in our series in the book of Ephesians. So if you've been tracking with us for the last several weeks, we've gone through the first three chapters of Ephesians. And the thing about the first three chapters of Ephesians, I don't know about you, but for me, it's incredible. It's incredible because Paul says chapter after chapter, verse after verse, almost word after word, he tells us all these incredible things that are true about us. He tells us all these incredible things that aren't just true about us, but they're true about us because of who? Because of Jesus. Things like we're chosen, we're adopted, we're redeemed by his blood, we're forgiven, we receive an inheritance. He says, we were dead, but we're made alive. We've been saved by grace. We're recreated for good. We're brought near to God. He says, we have access to God. We're strengthened with power by the Spirit. We're established in love. We have the fullness of God dwelling in us because of the Spirit. And Paul says this, all of that is the bigger picture for your life. Your life, my life, our lives, that is the bigger picture, according to Paul, of your life, meaning all of that, not some of it, not just a few, not just a little, all of it is true of all of you if your faith is in Jesus. That's what Paul wants us to see over and over and over in the first three chapters of Ephesians. But remember, I said there's a shift. And the reason I said that is because what happens is in the first three chapters of Ephesians, Paul tells us what's true, and now he's going to shift to broadly telling us what to do. So there's going to shift. The shift is Paul tells us what to do now, or what's true, and now he's going to start telling us what to do. And here's the thing. It's going to be hard. And I'm just going to be real with you. The next several weeks, at times, it's going to be hard. It's going to challenge us. Some of the things that Paul has to say, it's not going to be easy to hear. We're not going to like it. To be honest, I don't even like all the things that Paul has to say. And yet what I want us to do is I want us to keep Jesus' question in the back of our minds. Because here's the thing, that question that Jesus had for his closest friends 2,000 years ago is the same question that he has for us too. Is this what we really want? More specifically, is he what we really want? Is this what you really want? Do you really want Jesus, or do you just want the stuff that you think Jesus can give you? Do you want the gift, or do you want the giver? How do we know? How do we know what I really want? How do I know if what I really want is Jesus, or if what I really want is just the stuff that I think that Jesus can get me if I play the game long enough? How do we know? Well, Paul says that our lives give the answer. Our lives give the answer. So we'll pick up in chapter 4, verse 1. This is what Paul says. Therefore, I highlighted it. What's the therefore? It's there because all of what he said in the first three chapters is true. Because all of that is true, therefore, I, Paul, the prisoner in the Lord, I urge you to walk worthy of the calling you've received, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, making every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. So catch this. Right out of the gate, Paul says what? Paul tells us to do what? He says to walk worthy of the calling you've received. First thing that Paul says, he says, walk worthy. Because all of that is true. Because this bigger picture of your life is true. Walk worthy of the calling that you've received. What does that mean? Well, it just means live in a way that reflects the goodness of God in your life. Live in a way, not to earn anything, not to try hard, not to earn God. No. It's we reflect what God has done. We reflect God's goodness. We reflect what God has done in our lives. Okay, but how do we do that? Well, again, we don't have to guess. Paul tells us. He says, this is how we walk worthy of the calling that we've received. We walk with humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love. So how do I walk worthy? How do I reflect the goodness of God? How do I let others know what God has done in my life? He says, try humility. Try patience. Try gentleness. Try bearing with, not putting up with, but bearing with other people, not out of obligation, not because we have to, not because someone said to, but because we love people. We genuinely love people. That's how we walk. Worthy of the calling that we've received, worthy of what God has done in our lives. I was thinking about this. I want you to think about it too. I want you to think about, who do you know in your life like that? And I say that because for me, it was good. Sometimes it's helpful for me to think about, man, who do I know that's like this? Who in my life is gentle? Who in my life is humble? Who in my life is patient with me and with others? Who loves people well? Because it helps me to aim for something, right? So I want you to think for a second. Who in your life, who do you know right now that's humble? Who do you know right now that man, that person's really patient? That person's really gentle. Man, that person loves other people, not just the people that are easy to love, but loves everybody really well. Who do you know in your life like that? Okay, now I want to ask you a different question, and it's a harder question. Who thought of you when I asked that question? When I asked, who do you know that's humble? Who do you know that's gentle? Who do you know that's patient? Who do you know that bears with one another in love? Who thought of you? It's a hard question, isn't it? It's hard for me too. And I'm not trying to shame you. I'm asking that question because I think every once in a while, it's healthy for us to just take an honest assessment of our lives, right? Are these things true of me? Now, I'll be the first to admit that humility, gentleness, patience, I mean, if my wife were up here, she'd be like, not so much, right? Like, the people that know me best know that these things don't come natural to me. But that doesn't mean that I'm off the hook, right? Because these things are not optional. This is not optional. Just because it doesn't come natural to me, just because it's not my personality type, just because it's not my Enneagram number or whatever someone else tells me about my personality, doesn't mean that I don't have to do this. Paul says this is not optional. This is what it means to walk worthy of the calling that we've received. This is what it means to reflect the goodness of God in our lives. It's not optional. And so the same is true for you. Because this is what it means to do that which Paul is calling us to. And here's the thing. Maybe you're wondering, okay, I get it, but why is this so important? Why does this matter? Well, he says this. He says, because it's the way that we keep unity. He says, we do all those things. We walk worthy. We reflect the goodness of God in our lives. We're humble and gentle and patient. And we bear with one another in love. Why? Because it keeps the unity. See, the Spirit creates unity amongst believers. We don't create unity. We get to keep unity. Another way of translating this word keep is maintain. And so what Paul is saying that we are to do is we as believers, we are to work for, we are to fight for, we have to develop and grow and keep unity. Unity. John Mark Comer, you've heard us talk about John Mark Comer. We're fans around here of I'm certainly a fan of many of the things that he's written and said and taught. One of these books that he's written that's had a pretty significant impact on my life is The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And he says something in this book that I think about often. He says this. He says, do you ever catch yourself with a sneaking suspicion that you'll wake up on your deathbed with this nagging sense that somehow in all the hurry and all the busyness, all the frenetic activity, that you miss the most important things? I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or what, but parts of this quote just kind of haunt me sometimes, right? Because if I'm honest, my life is busy, right? This busyness and hurry and frenetic activity. I don't even totally know what frenetic means, but I'm just going with it, right? Like, it's so true of my life. It's just go, 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 go. I mean, I feel like even this week, the last 2 days, it's just go, 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 go. I don't see my wife. I don't see my kids. I don't have time to stop and say hi. I barely have time to eat meals with people. You know, I'm just going. And I just sometimes pause and I get this sense that maybe I'm missing it. Maybe I'm missing. Does that connect with you guys at all? Like I know you're busy, right? Like, I know you're busy. I know you got all sorts of, and by the way, great things. I'm not dogging on busyness. I'm not dogging on all these things. Like, I'm just saying, I know these years are busy for you. But do you ever pause and just think to yourself, am I missing anything? Do you ever get the sense that maybe there really is something that I'm missing? See, the reason I'm bringing all this up is because I think that unity amongst believers is one of these things that we miss because we don't think a lot about it. We don't spend much time talking about, we don't spend much time thinking about what it means to be unified. This idea of Christian unity. And yet for Paul, it's a huge emphasis. It's a huge emphasis in the Bible. I mean, he goes on in the next several verses, picking up, I think, in verse 4. Yeah. He says, look, there is one body, one spirit, just as you were called to one hope at your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God, Father of all, who's above all and through all and in all. I mean, I highlight it. It's one, 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 right? It's one, not two, not three, not four. It's one. Unity. And yet... It's so easy to be divided, isn't it? I mean, just think about life right now. It is so easy to be outraged, to be angry, to point fingers, to cast blame, to fire off an angry tweet, to do the thing. It's so easy to know who you're against and talk about that openly and honestly and loudly. And yet Paul is calling us. Again, not optional. This is what it means to walk worthy of the calling that we've... This is what it means to reflect the goodness of God. This is what it means to reflect what God has done in our lives. He says to be unified. This is what it means to be a Christian, to be unified, to fight for unity, to be at peace with one another, not just the people that we like. It's easy to be unified with people we like, right? It's easy, well, maybe not always, but easier to be unified with the people that we like the things that we like, that are people that we think maybe can get the things that we think we want from. Like, I can fight for unity with that person. I can fight for peace with that person. But what about the person that's really hard to love? What about the person that's not so easy to be at peace? Like, no, that person, yeah, it's a lot harder. Paul is calling us to be humble and patient and gentle and loving, because when we aren't those things, it gets in the way of our unity. It steals peace with other people. If you're proud, if I'm proud, if we're harsh, if we're unloving, then we aren't unified. You can't be harsh and unified. You can't be unloving and at peace, right? Paul says back in verse 3, he says to make every effort. Not a little bit of effort. Not some effort. Not when you're having a great day effort. Not when your readiness score effort is high. No, he says make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. So I think this naturally raises a question, at least it did for me, is that us? If you're a believer, is this true of your life? Not broadly, like right now, is this true for you? So maybe there's someone that you need to go and talk to. And I don't know, maybe it's a little uncomfortable because, to be honest, that person's in this room right now. But that's what it looks like, to make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Maybe you're the one that's caused the disunity. It's one thing to say, man, it's their fault, but what about when it's our fault? Maybe sometimes we're the cause. Maybe you're the cause. Maybe you need to go to that person and say, you know what? And just be honest. Maybe you've said something or done something lately that's caused a lack of peace. Have you confessed that? Maybe you just need to spend time with God, being real, confessing your pride, confessing your harshness, confessing your lack of patience, confessing the way that you fail to love other people, and not just confessing, but asking that the Spirit of God would be at work in you to produce change and transformation in your life. See, Paul says, make every effort. The question is, how much effort are you and I willing to make? I want you to seriously wrestle with that. Remember, I said sometimes this stuff is going to be hard. This is uncomfortable, I know. I wish Davis had to say it to you. Right? But how much effort are we willing to make to be unified, to be at peace with other people, other believers? Now, I know it's hard. I know it's uncomfortable. But Paul says that unity with other people, unity with other believers, unity in house, it's one of the most important things about being a Christian. This is fundamental to what it means to walking out this calling that God has given, walking out reflecting this goodness of, reflecting what all those things that are true, the bigger picture of my life, this is fundamental to living that out. And Paul goes on though, because this isn't it. He says there's other important things. He says, so this is verse 7. He says, now grace was given to each one of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. He goes on in verse 11. He says, and he himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. Why? To equip the saints for the work of ministry, to do what? To build up the body of Christ, the church, until we all, or so that we reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of God's Son. Why? Growing into maturity with a stature measured by Christ's fullness. So what Paul is saying is, he's saying that everyone, you, me, all believers, we've all been given different gifts. Do you know that? You've been given gifts. God has uniquely gifted you. I don't know what your gifts are, but you might, or maybe we should talk about it. But you've been given gifts. I've been given gifts. We've all been given gifts. Why? To equip one another, to build up the body so that we would grow and mature. Right? We're given gifts so that we would collectively grow, collectively mature alongside one another. Okay, so here's a cringy thing about me. I love milk. Super weird, I know. And here's the deal. I love whole milk, right? It's the only way to go. It is the only way to go. Ever since I've been a little kid, whole milk is my jam. I know, my wife thinks I'm weird. You think I'm weird. Now, I'm just weird, so whatever. I love milk. And here's the even weirder thing. Someone's going to rip that audio clip, and it's just me saying, I love milk. Even weirder, my favorite, you know what my favorite time, one of my favorite times to drink milk is? The middle of the night, man. Just a chug from the jug in the middle of the night. I'm in my happy place, right? What the heck is this dude talking about right now? So I'm telling you this story because recently I did this. I chose joy, and I got up in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep because I'm getting old, and I said, I want some milk.
So I walk down the stairs. I didn't put my glasses on. I can't really see at the night. All the lights are off, obviously. So I walk down the stairs. I kind of groggily stumble. Groggily is not a word, but you get the point, right? Go into my kitchen, pull the thing open. It's a little lighter than normal. I don't know why. Usually the milk jug's full. My wife knows I need milk, so she buys more. This is kind of light. Whatever. Just, yeah, what was in that? You know, I didn't realize how old that milk was. And I'll spare you the details, but what came out isn't what it looked like coming in, and I think maybe some other things landed on the floor as well. Why did you tell that story, Kyle? Because here's the thing, not everything gets better with age. Not everything, I want you to think about this for a second because it's gonna connect to what Paul's saying. Not everything gets better with age. Because so I'm saying that because Paul is saying that maturity in our faith, it's not a given just because you're getting older. You are not growing in your relationship with Jesus just because you are getting older. Now, I suppose on the one hand, that's a pretty obvious statement, but I think that a lot of us, and this is true for me for a really long time, I thought just because I'm getting older, I must be getting wiser. Just because I'm getting older must mean that I'm getting mature. Just because I'm getting older, I've been a Christian for a long time. 14 years old, I came to know Jesus and love Jesus. I must be getting more and more mature. But here's the thing, I think sometimes a lot of us get stuck. Because we stop working at growing. We stop working at maturing. But Paul is saying, no, maturity is something that we have to work at. We have to grow in. Why? Well, he goes on, he says, so that we're no longer be little children, tossed by the waves and blown around by every wind of teaching, by human cunning with cleverness and the techniques of deceit. That's kind of a word salad, but what he's saying is, look, children, by nature of being young, aren't mature, right? They're easily deceived. I mean, that's just kind of part of the deal. And Paul's saying kind of in the same way that if we don't grow into our maturity, if we don't grow in our faith in Jesus and in our faithfulness to Jesus, this is the same thing that happens, right? We get deceived, we get tricked, we get stuck, we get tossed around by every new thing, we get tossed around by the algorithm, by what's new on TikTok. We get tossed around by every new hot topic idea. And all the while, we're stuck in our immaturity. I've said this several times this semester, and I want you to hear me say it again. You have an enemy. This is not just a passive thing that happens. It is something that you have an enemy that wants you to not mature. You have an enemy that wants you to be deceived. You have an enemy that doesn't want you to grow. But Paul says that maturity is the goal. Growing in our love for Jesus, growing in our love for each other, that's where all of us should be headed. Which raises a natural question. Are we? Well, are you? Is maturity, is grow, is that where your head, I mean, if you're honest with yourself, just be honest with yourself for a second. You don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to say anything out loud. But like, if you're honest with yourself, are you growing in your maturity, in your faith in Jesus? Is your life being changed, transformed by the work of the Spirit through you? Now, of course it's messy, right? Of course it's messy. We're not trying to pretend like we have to have it all figured out all the time. A lot of times the Christian life is two steps forward, one step back. Maybe some days it's one step forward, two steps back. Maybe some days it's just two steps back. It's messy. It's complicated. I'm not trying to pretend like it's easy. It's not easy. But what's the trajectory right now for you? Are you stuck in infancy? Or are you growing and maturing? Let me pause for a second and say I want you to hear me say this. For some of us, we're not stuck in infancy. We're just infants.
And what I mean by that is that we're new to the faith. We're new to the Jesus thing. We still have all sorts of questions, all sorts of concerns, all sorts of doubts. We're still trying to figure out all sorts of things. And so in some sense, that's who we are. We're infants in the faith. And that is a wonderful thing, right? The rest of us are those of us who maybe are a little bit farther along. I want you to hear me say, we should not get annoyed by infants in places like this, because what it means is that the church is growing. And so it is a good thing to have infants. But there is a different difference between being new to the faith and being stuck in infancy. And so the question then becomes for all of us, whether we're new to the faith or we've been following Jesus for a while, because I think we all can answer the question, are we growing? Are we maturing? Or what steps do we need to take in order to do that, right? So maybe you're new, or maybe you've kind of been one foot in, one foot out with Veritas, and for you, a step that you need to take is to commit yourself to being here every Tuesday night for the rest of the semester. I don't know. Maybe that's a step for you. Maybe the step for you is, hey, you know what? I've been saying that I want to read my Bible for a long time, and I just haven't done it. And so maybe the step for you is, I'm just going to get back, or I'm going to get into my Bible somewhat regularly, just a little bit here, every day. Maybe you need to spend more time praying. Maybe for you, it's time to, maybe not this semester, but this summer or this fall, right? Maybe it's time to get involved in a group, one of our small groups or a connection group. Maybe you've been around long enough and it's time to branch out of Tuesday night, and you need to get connected to the church. You need to start coming to the Crossing on Sunday and be in the community of an intergenerational body, not just Gen Z. Maybe for others of us, it's time to start our generosity journey. And I know we don't have a lot of money in college, but maybe part of our discipleship now is that we need to start giving back to the church. It's all God's money anyway, and so what little we have, maybe we can start giving a part of it. I don't know what it is for you, but you probably do, right? Maybe the first step that I need to make is I just need to tell someone about a sin that's happening in my life. I don't know. But I want you to answer that question, not out loud, right? But answer that question. And here's the thing. I just want to challenge you. I can't force you to do this, but I'll challenge you, and I think you'll be happy you did it. Go and tell someone your answer. Go and tell someone what steps you need and want or need help wanting to take in order to grow in your faith in Jesus. And then maybe ask the person to share theirs and listen and help each other. Because here's the thing, it takes all of us, right? Here's the thing, you need other people to help you grow, and other people need you. We need other people to help us grow, and other people need us, right? This is how Paul says it. He says, but speaking the truth in love, let us grow in every way into him, Jesus, who is the head, Christ. From him, the whole body, fitted and knitted together by every supporting ligament, promotes growth of the body for building itself up in love by the proper working of each individual part. You see what he's saying here? Everybody has a part to play. This is a picture of Josh Allen. Now, if you don't know who Josh Allen is, I might feel like I'm picking on the Buffalo Bills this semester. I'm not. As far as I know, Josh Allen's a great guy. Don't know him, but seems like a nice guy. And if you have no idea who he is, he's quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. This past season, he won the NFL MVP. So he's the NFL's most valuable player. And because he's the most valuable player and he's the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, that means the Buffalo Bills are the best team in the NFL, right? No. Not even close, right? I get it's funny, but I'm not trying to really be that funny. I'm just saying not even close, right? We all know that's not how it works. Having the best player is not the point. It's having a group of people. The best team has a group of people working hard, doing their part, contributing to their team. It's not having the all-star. It's having a team of people working together. That's what makes a better team. See, I think part of what God is calling us to tonight He's calling us. He's calling you. He's calling me. Yeah, you guys can come back up. Good. You snuck up here. I didn't even see you. He's calling us to do our part in building up the team. And of course, the team is not a team, it's the body, right? The church. And I don't mean a physical building. God is not calling us to build the physical church. He's calling us to build the body, the people. That is the church, the body. Everyone has a part to play as we grow and mature together. You have a part to play. That's what God is saying to you tonight. You have a part. Have you ever think about it? I mean, has anybody told you that you actually have? And it's not just a throwaway part. It's a big deal. The most important things, unity, maturity, growth, you have a part to play. And the question is, do you want it? Here's the thing, if you want it, then walk worthy of the calling that you have received. Reflect the goodness of God in your life. Be humble. Be patient. Be loving. Be gentle. Fight for unity. Strive for peace. See, growth will happen. It will happen when we all play our part. Let me just pray that that happens for us. God, I thank you for this group of people. And I thank you for the bigger picture that you are playing out in our lives and for the part that you are giving us to play inside of that. Help us, Jesus, to be people who are walking worthy of this calling that you've given us, the high honor of reflecting your goodness in the world. Help us to be humble. Help us to be patient. Help us to be gentle. Help us to be loving. Help us to strive for peace and unity and growth and maturity. Oh God, we need you to be at work. We can't do it on our own. We need you and we need each other. Build up this body. In your name we pray. Amen.